And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, bright and bushy-tailed on a Monday morning after the Super Bowl. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles, and in particular to one of my dearest friends in the whole world, PJ Tobia, an outstanding journalist for PBS NewsHour, lifelong Eagles fan. PJ, please check in. I know you went out on Broad Street after the game last night. I need proof that you are still alive and that Philly has not been burned to the ground, but congrats to the Eagles. But it's trade deadline week in the NBA. The trade deadline is 3 days away, and there is no better person in the world to discuss it with than all-knowing ESPN insider Adrian Wojnarowski. How you doing, Woj?
Zach, I'm great, and I am not surprised. You have a close friend who works for PBS NewsHour, by the way.
Oh, he's a beast, man. Yeah. He just he does like real stuff.
I know.
Like,
I know. You know,
Unlike us. Yeah, he reports on Syrian refugees. He's been all over the world. He's a beast. So it struck me last night, by the way, that there's all these little small ripple effects of the NBA moving the trade deadline up by 10 days. One of which is like, there could have been a trade during the Super Bowl. Has there ever been a trade during the Super Bowl?
A trade during the Super Bowl? No, because I think most teams kind of, teams I talked to, a few of them were in their offices, but they had food. They were watching the game. They weren't on the phone. And, you know, it's hard to get your owner during it. I think it's probably hard to get your owner during a Super Bowl. Like, some of those guys go, some of them just have like rich guy parties that they have to go to with their wives. And so I think it's probably hard to get business done during the game.
I think there needs to be an informal understanding that nothing can happen during the Super Bowl. That just like it's a pretty light day on the NBA schedule. All the games are usually in the afternoon. There were six yesterday. I think there's usually like two. And so the Super Bowl, I actually sit down. I don't watch any football. I actually sit down and have friends over and watch the Super Bowl like a normal human being. That we need to preserve that. There needs to be an informal no trades during the Super Bowl. Do you agree?
It's fine with me.
You don't care. You were ready to go if there was a trade last night.
Well, hopefully, but I think it's harder even for executives who have families. Like, they're going to take heat for being on the phone just like anybody else will. So I do think it's almost, you know, there's always a one-off. The Andre Liggins deal did get done during the pregame show.
I saw that. I have notifications for you on Twitter, so I saw that.
But that's not exactly, you know, it was a deal they were working on there for a couple of days. So anyway, but we're past it, and now it's you know, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern is a deadline.
Here we go. Okay, so the story of the weekend in the NBA, I think, was the Cavs just absolutely no-showing for what feels like the 10th straight time against a good team on national TV. The Rockets won by 9,000 points. Chris Paul was plus 9,047. You reported right after the game that Ty Lue's job is safe, which speaks volumes about how bad the Cavs have been lately and against good teams that needs to be reported. The guy just won a championship
right
2 years ago. They are the center of the storm because of LeBron. They're the center of the storm because they have the Nets pick, which could fall anywhere. You know, it could fall wherever, depending on the lottery, but probably 6, 7, 8, 9, something like that. Which is a pretty good trade chip, maybe as good a trade chip as there is outside that Lakers-Kings pick that exists in limbo between Boston and Philly. They have expiring contracts that were supposedly already going to be traded for George Hill. They have Isaiah Thomas's expiring contract. Do you sense something needs to happen just to clear the stench in the locker room? But I don't know what it is, and we can talk about players that they may or may not be able to target with the Nets pick or their own pick. I mean, constructing deals for them is much harder than I think people realize it is. But is there anything going on there? What are you hearing?
You know, a lot of the same things they had going on last week. You mentioned George Hill, and there's a lot on their board that they're kind of just weighing as they get closer to Thursday and see what's, in the end, what's the best possible deal they could do, what makes sense. But I think the worse this team gets, the worse the environment, the relationships, and the relationships are frayed at every level. Player on player, coach on player, owner on player, front office, star player, that there's no savior for them. There's no trade that's going to fix this. Certainly not anybody who's available or they could get with what they have. Like, and so I think the Cavs are really weighing how much, if at all, do we give up, do we cut into our future assets, whether it's draft pick, you know, their, even their own pick, which has been readily available, their own 2018 pick, not the Nets pick. Do they do that even? Like anything that short circuits the rebuild that I think they feel pretty confident is going to come here based on how this has gone. Like how much do they want to do, to mortgage any of their future? Not, I get not doing the Nets pick, but why trade even their own pick? And so I think they have a lot of really hard questions to ask of themselves this week, and they just don't have players that interest people. And, you know, Tristan Thompson's contract and J.R. Smith and some of the guys with the big numbers on their team are just not movable. And if you're the Clippers, the idea of taking Tristan Thompson on just to get the Cavaliers 2018 pick, let's say it's going to be, I don't know, 25, 26, wherever it falls, is it worth taking on all of that Thompson money going forward? The answer to that is probably not. And so, you know, George Hill's not a game changer in any way. And I just think that they, I just think this weekend only sort of, I think it further crystallized the fact that their issues are so deep and their future, I think, with this group is so bleak right now, including LeBron, that they're asking themselves these tough questions.
You talk to people there, we all do, you know, it's really bad. And then you ask sort of like drill down for me, like, why is it really bad? And a lot of it is what Windy wrote over the weekend, just the hovering uncertainty of what's going to happen with LeBron, the animosity between LeBron and Dan Gilbert, the clutch angle, given the contracts to Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, you know, clutch is the agency that represents LeBron among others. And the immovability of those contracts and all of that. But like that was all pre-existing. You know, maybe the Kyrie Irving trade sort of, made it boil up to the surface, because I think Kyrie requested a trade in part because he could see all of this coming.
Yes.
When a lot of us, even if you could see it coming, I think when you live it, you know it's coming at a more profound and obvious level. And this is why he parachuted out of there. But there's got to be something else going on. Like when you say player on player, player on coach on player, like it can't just be LeBron and Dave, or maybe it can, but is there anything else going on in there? Like, is there any other sort of squabbling between guys that we know about?
Well, you said it in a couple spots there. I think the LeBron, James, Dan Gilbert issues sort of set the tone in the organization for others to square off. I think it, when the two most powerful people in the organization have that kind of a relationship, I think it opens the door for others to have that. I mean, the best player and the owner, and that sets a tone. And so I think it only serves to amplify the other issues there. And you just have a lot of taking of sides. You have a lot of cliques. You know, the guys who've been there, the guys who just came in. You know, certainly the what's going on with players, coaches, and there being a disconnect there. But I do think it does get back to in the Kyrie LeBron summer and Kyrie wanting out. And no one's ever really done that to LeBron. No one's ever really said, I don't want to play with him. And somebody said it and did it and acted on it and got out. And, I think that Kyrie essentially said, I'm not going to let LeBron dictate my future. Organizations, whether it was Cleveland the first time and then Miami, everyone has sort of in the league had to wait for LeBron to dictate terms. And a player said, I'm going to dictate it and I'm out of here. And then the team acquiesced and traded him. And so I think that just that set the stage for this. And anyone who thought that, remember at the time, I was surprised to hear people saying they thought, hey, Cleveland won this trade. Like, not on any planet ever. Were they, did they, you know, and so, especially with Isaiah coming off the injury, and I have a lot of respect for Isaiah. He's built an incredible career for himself. But, you know, Kyrie is, you know, an all-world player. And you've seen in the past, Cleveland could deal with some of these issues, deal with a lot of these issues, because they still had Kyrie and they had an ability where their talent still won out. And now their talent doesn't do that. And when LeBron goes into a stretch like he's played, you know, Kyrie was there to bail them out of situations, out of games, out of a 2 or 3 week spin. And now there's no one there to do that.
Yeah, I said this on The Jump last week. Like, I don't want to hear the Isaiah Thomas trade revisionism from people. Like, you just got to admit that you're wrong. Like, we're all going to be wrong about a lot of stuff. Like, one that's been made very clear to me over the last couple weeks is, like, I'm going to be wrong on Jamal Murray. I wasn't high enough on Jamal Murray. I wrote earlier this year that he may top out as a league average point. He may top out as a league average point guard. There are scenarios where he's going to be better than that. He's going to be better than that. Like, he's going to be the second best player on the Nuggets and better than I thought he was going to be. That's very clear. But, like, I remember I was in Croatia when the trade happened. I almost made it through my vacation with nothing happening. And I woke up to this just waterfall of news. And I sit there bleary-eyed and I digest the trade and I tweeted I just felt obligated to weigh in for some reason. And I tweeted something like, I think this trade makes sense for both teams. Like, you know, the Cavs get this great draft pick. The Celtics are betting that, you know, Brad can transform Kyrie into maybe a little bit of a different, better player or whatever. And all I got back was Ainge got swindled. Ainge overpaid. This is an unbelievable, what a job by the Cavs. What a job by Colby Altman. And like a lot of those same people are now like, oh man, that trade was a disaster. Like these things are very hard to predict. They're going to change how they look in 6 months and 2 years. But I just don't want to hear how like this was a disaster for Cleveland, because 90% of the reaction when it happened was, this is a great trade for the Cavs. They serve their present and their future at the same time, and it hasn't worked out. It hasn't worked out for reasons that were like kind of predictable if you knew about Isaiah's health situation. And so here we are. But let's zoom back out.
And one thing though on that, Zach, is I think they made the best deal that was out there for them. If they were going to trade him,
it's still the best deal. No one has presented a better one.
Because at the time, there was one thing they valued in that trade, and it was the pick. They hoped Thomas could get better. Crowder has not played to the level that we've seen him play in Boston, and I think it's a testament to Brad Stevens of how really in his system players' values have increased. He has showcased what guys can do really well and hid weaknesses at times, and Crowder's value, I think even in trade talks here with other teams, has not been nearly what it was leaving Boston. And so if they were going to do the trade, they were the one team that could give them a lottery pick. And, you know, I guess Phoenix, there were some other teams involved, I guess, Boston was a team that could give them a couple things to help them in the present, they hoped. And maybe Isaiah still will here before this year's over. There's a ways to go. But in the end, Cleveland valued, as, you know, we both talked at length about this. They valued that Brooklyn pick because they felt like, you know, they're in a situation where LeBron was, you know, they're not really confident about his future there.
What happened to the George Hill trade? Why did that not happen, or has it not happened?
Well, I think a couple things. One, I think the $19 million owed next year in Cleveland, now he has a third year on a deal, which is, I think, a $1 million guarantee. That's not an issue. But if LeBron leaves and they rebuild, you know, they've got that, you know, essentially $20 million deal on their books next year. And how impactful is he going to be? I think it's remained on their board. They might need a third team here to finish it. I know they did some of that. They've continued to have some of those conversations for a third team to be involved, to maybe take on one of the Cleveland contracts. But I just think Cleveland felt like, you know what, that deal's going to be there for us, and let's wait and see what else is out there before we commit to it.
Hey, everyone. Buying tickets to sporting events, concerts, it used to stress me out when I had friends coming into town. You know, am I missing this site? Am I missing that site? Am I missing a good deal? How do I know where the seat is? Is it going to be stressful? SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to buy tickets. It eases everything. The whole process is demystified for you. You can do it for concerts, sporting events, whatever. It has this very easy to use site that collates the whole secondary market. It grades tickets so you know if you're getting a good deal, a bad deal, an undermarket deal, whatever it is. It saves you time. It saves you money. Every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with full confidence. Just download the app. It's awesome. And best of all my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the app, enter promo code LOW, my last name, L-O-W-E, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOW, and you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's actually a lot. And guess what? SeatGeek has a special NBA offer that runs through All-Star Weekend, which is coming up soon. First-time purchasers can get $30 off any NBA ticket between now and February 19th. Just use a different promo code, ready? POST, the second word of this podcast, POST, for $30 off any NBA purchase. And it's not just for games between now and February 19th when All-Star is. It's for any game. You just have to act between now and February 19th. So you can act now and save $30. It's promo code POST, P-O-S-T, for $30 off NBA tickets. Or you can use my promo code LOW, L-O-W, for $20 off any kind of purchase at all. Let's go through some of the scenarios that people have pitched and that are realistic for the Nets pick, because it's an interesting way to talk about other teams too and what they're doing. Because there are a lot of, I mean, Chris Paul said it after the Rockets game, you know, don't take for granted that you have LeBron James on your team. And the subtext of that, as Rachel Nichols said very eloquently on The Jump last week, was like, you gotta have the Nets pick out there because this is LeBron James. And if you think you have a good chance or a decent chance or a plurality chance at keeping the second greatest player ever, like you gotta go all in to do that. And so Rachel and I went back and forth like, okay, so what trades are out there? So let's go through some trades that, so it's very clear by now they're not giving up the Nets pick for DeAndre Jordan. Like if that were going to happen, I think that would have happened. Is that fair?
That is fair. That is okay. He does not meet the threshold of, Jordan doesn't meet the threshold of what Cleveland would want to give up that pick, which I, by the way, don't think they give up this week, but.
Nor do I, and we're going to get into why. And so another name that's come up is, okay, could you get it for CJ McCollum? Could you trade it for CJ McCollum if you gave Portland Kevin Love? And my response to that was, I'm not sure Kevin Love for CJ McCollum, you know, exchanging a defensively challenged shooting big for a slightly less defensively challenged, you know, scoring two guard is changing your life as a franchise. So could you get CJ McCollum? Would you do the Nets pick and Tristan Thompson for CJ McCollum? Maybe, but I don't know that Portland is doing
that. I don't know why Portland would do that. I think CJ McCollum, and I have no reason to believe CJ McCollum that Portland has any interest in trading him. In fact, I don't think they do. But you know, you never, until you're offered something significant, players like that usually aren't getting moved, but I think McCollum has I think McCollum has a lot more value in the league than a deal that would be comprised of that.
Let's just quickly, the Blazers are one of many teams I'm interested in, I brought them up mostly on purpose. They have something like $115 million committed already next season without including Nurkic, who's due a new contract. Shabazz Napier is due a new contract. Noah Vonleh, probably a non-entity there. Ed Davis is a free agent, a very valuable player for them this year. It has really kind of outplayed Nurkic for the last month of the season. They're going to, long story short, they're going to be over the tax for a team that's pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. They're $3 million over the tax now. And if you're $3 million over the tax and you're just pretty good, usually your operating principle is we're going to do whatever it takes to get under it. I've heard the same as you, which is that any calls to break up the Lillard McCollum backcourt have been summarily rejected by the Blazers. Do they have anything cooking in terms of just getting under the tax, cleaning up their books for next year? Any of these guys, your Myers Leonard, your Harklesses, your Evan Turners, any of those contracts even movable?
Well, I think Harkless is a player that has been discussed in some different places, and that's certainly a position, you know, they've wanted to get better at and upgrade, but it's tough. Everybody in the league wants, there's such a premium on wings, and you know, Harkless had his best season a couple years ago before they did the 4-year deal, and hasn't played as well since. You know, Sacramento in the past has had some interest in him, but, you know, I think that for, you know, Portland, you know, they checked in with the Clippers on DeAndre Jordan. Obviously, Neil O'Shea drafted DeAndre Jordan when he was the GM of the Clippers, drafted him early in the second round, and helped certainly put together that Clippers core that was there for a long time. And, I'm told that Portland has backed away a bit from that. I think, you know, if you're Portland and you do DeAndre Jordan, hypothetically, you know, you're locked in financially for that. That's your team. And you're giving DeAndre an extension at 30 years old and 4 years or 5 years, whatever it would be. And you better be ready for that to be your team. And is that team good enough? And so, as of this weekend, I had been told that Portland was not, you know, again, I wouldn't say they were ever aggressive. I think they have to make the calls. Everyone's going to make the call. But that doesn't seem to be a road they're going to go down on. It can always change, you know, before Thursday. But listen, I think Portland is, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to add that third piece and Nurkic, you know, what's Nurkic going to be for them? You know, he played so well immediately after the trade last year, before he had the injury that kind of shut him down at the end of the year. And then he's been up and down this year, and probably not a coincidence he didn't get the extension this summer. I think you want to see with him, his career has sort of been earmarked by up and down. He's obviously very talented, and you want to see some consistency in a lot of ways with him. And so, you know, I think they'll keep looking at Nurkic, see what the right number is for him this summer to do a deal. And but I still think they could be active here this week. But, you know, I think McCollum and Lillard, while I know there's been this call of, hey, let's trade one of them and break this up, it's a great strength for them. And, you know, you if you're going to move one of those guys, I mean, you got to feel like you're going to make your team better. And, you know, the guards together have been, you know, this is a team that's been, they've won a lot. They've, you know, they were, I mean, a tough loss to Boston on Sunday, but given everything, they've been, you know, they've been in the playoffs 4 straight years. Not everybody in the West can say that, and not everybody in the league can say that. And the group has had success. I think they want to keep building off of those two and find a third guy, using picks and whatever other players there have. The guy there who they've been excited about, in a training camp when I went out to Portland, Zach Collins, who wasn't quite ready to play early, it reminds me a little bit of McCollum's rookie year where everyone was excited about him, wasn't getting a lot of minutes, but they think Collins is going to be really, really good. And that was, even in training camp, it was like, it wasn't just the front office who drafted him. You would talk to players, you talk to the head coach, assistants, everybody around there, like, Collins has a chance to be really, really good. And as he's gotten a chance to play more, people have seen that. And so he's definitely a building block for them and a guy that they're not going to put in any deal.
Yeah, the Collins, Ed Davis backup front court has been very effective for them. Yeah, just building a deal for a Portland Clippers deal for DJ, like, unless the Clippers just love Vonleh or Nurkic, and it's hard to, Vonleh doesn't play anymore. I just don't know, like, Evan Turner plus Nurkic plus a Blazers pick is not lighting my world on fire, and I just don't know what the deal is that the Clippers are taking from Portland. By the way, the Clippers is just the big seismic event of last week was obviously Blake Griffin, and now the Clippers have, you know, Bradley and Harris looked great in his debut over the weekend. Bradley's sort of been, you know, has had a weird injury plagued, not great year. DJ and Lou are still there. And Doc, I don't remember what Doc exactly said. I think he said, we're not trying to trade everybody, which is a very, very smart and literally true thing to say, because
right,
it's not possible to trade everybody. My impression is that the Clippers are still very much open for business, but I didn't check in much over the weekend with them. What's your impression?
Yeah, very much open for business. I think there's probably a little bit more on the board right now for Lou Williams than there is DeAndre Jordan. I think it's entirely possible that DeAndre Jordan does not get traded this week. I mean, because, again, anybody who trades for him wants to think there's, you know, some pressure there that you want to know what it's going to cost and what an extension would look like. And not everybody in the world's ready to pay him, you know, 4 years, 115. You know, let's say he opted into his last year and then he added the years on to an extension, or he opted out and you, but I think that, there's teams who want him and I think would pay him and would pay him, but the Clippers are looking at this. They don't want to take back a bunch of, you know, future money. They want to get money off. I think their preference ultimately would be to let him walk instead of taking back a bad contract or a couple bad contracts just to get, let's say, a late first round pick or a pick that's not like, it's one thing if Cleveland's giving you the Brooklyn pick and you take on Tristan Thompson's money. I think you'd look at that. But you're not taking on Tristan Thompson's money for the Cleveland 2018 pick, which is in the late 20s. That just doesn't, kind of the math teams do that a pick in that area doesn't, it's not worth the value of having that money on your cap. So there's a chance. I just think they're determined. And listen, you can say that now and then all of a sudden it's Thursday at 1 and Thursday at 2 and then maybe you do something you didn't want to do, but I think they're trying to be very disciplined there about what they get back for him. And if it's, you know, bad contracts and things, contracts that go out multiple years, even with a pick, I think they may choose to just let him walk.
Speaking of Thursday at 1 to 2 p.m., I've always wanted to ask you this. It just jogged my memory. So we had our daughter, on February 18th, 2015. And I believe the trade deadline that year was February 19th. So I was obviously out for the trade deadline, just totally out. There's no, so all I'm hoping for is just like nothing happens at the trade deadline. I'm hoping for the quietest trade deadline ever. So I don't have to come back 3 days later and like absorb all of this new information. So I check in, you know, our daughter was born the day before. So we're just in the hospital hanging around, like understanding this new reality. And I check my phone every 90 minutes or so. Okay. Nothing's happening. About 1:45 or 2, I check my phone. Nothing's happening. Okay. Nothing's happening. I'm like, man, we may get out of here. I may get out of here scot free. And I check my phone again at 3:05 and it's just every point guard in the league just got traded. It's unclear what team Isaiah Thomas is even on. And everyone is retweeting. I think you just tweeted, good Lord.
Yeah. At the end.
And it's gone down in as a Hall of Fame tweet. what prompted you to tweet that? Did you think, because most of your tweets are very businesslike. Yeah. Rarely do we get a peek behind the curtain.
Very little humanity, right?
Yeah. Did you second guess yourself? Was there a certain trade that just went over the line?
No, it was just the, sheer volume in what was a, within, I guess it was an hour, it may have been even less than an hour of just an incredible volume of deals. I remember I just sighed. I think it was, I felt like I'd gotten the last, even though the deadline comes, there's still deals you have to keep pushing until about 20, 25 minutes after, because there's deals that got in at the horn that teams are still making sure that they got into the quote unquote, the queue there, they call it in the league. And they want to make sure that they got it in time before they're going to tell you there's a trade, because if they didn't get it in, then they want to make believe it never happened because they got a player who's coming back to them. So I just remember, I think it was just more of a sigh, like, wow, that was a lot of stuff in the window. But you're right on the Isaiah Thomas. I remember, I knew he had been traded, and let's see, it was a three-way with Philly, right? He got to Boston on a three-way with Philly, and I remember somebody saying to me, I think he's going to Philly. And then somebody said, no, it's not Philly. And then somebody said, hey, it's Boston. And then I got it. And then reported, hey, Isaiah's going to Boston. That might have been near the end of it, I guess. But there was just a whole bunch of stuff. I want to say that, was it like 10% of the league's players got traded that day? Is that what the number was?
It didn't turn into the quiet trade deadline that I had been hoping for. Let's put it that way.
No, and it's always that last, it's funny. It's just like, people think if you move the date up, is that going to move the activity up? Like, and it's just like you have a paper due, right? And so if they tell you the paper's due on February 16th, well, like, you're going to really start jamming on it, at least me anyway. You're going to start jamming on it on the 14th or 15th. And if the trade deadline's the 8th, well, everyone's going to start jamming here on the 6th and the 7th. And so it's just the league needs deadlines to get deals done. It's just how it's been, and maybe it shouldn't be. But it is. And so everyone kind of is waiting. No one's got anyone's best offer yet. And I think, too, this was a deadline where so many teams are jammed up that teams have been trying to put off as long as they could, having to make hard decisions about their own team because, you know, either they don't know what to make of it yet, or they're trying to figure out, like, I mean, what are we trying to do? Like, Detroit, well, they want to make the playoffs, and they want to be able to, I think, business played a part in that, too. They need to try to put some people in that arena. There's other teams going,
which they will deny to high heaven forever and ever that had anything to do with the Blake
Griffin
trade.
Like, it should. It's a business. I get it.
I agree.
Like,
I don't think it's something to be ashamed of.
No, I agree with you. Like, listen, if it's a player that doesn't make any sense and doesn't fit, like, if that's like he fits what we're trying to do and he sells Blake Griffin. It's funny. I always remember, when I realized he was. Remember, there was a Nets-Clippers game in East Rutherford. It wasn't his rookie, his first year, the first year he played.
Right.
And you talk about a night guaranteed to be an empty arena, right? Clippers-Nets in East Rutherford. Oof. I want to say it was later in the season. And my son was pretty young. He must have been – I remember I was going to take him over to a game, and I went to look at the tickets, and I was shocked. Like, it's sold out. What? How could a Nets – I remember just saying to myself – how could a Nets-Clippers game be sold out? Or I remember there just weren't tickets. And I said, wow, Blake Griffin, wow, he's a real ticket seller. Like, it didn't dawn on me that, because usually in arenas that don't sell tickets, like are teams that there's certain guys, like the Lakers are coming in, Kobe will fill the building. Cavs are coming in, people want to see LeBron. And I remember that was the first time it dawned on me that, wow, Blake Griffin, I remember saying, boy, it has to be Blake Griffin. Like, that says a lot about just how popular he had become so quickly. And so I'll be kind of interested to see, like, is that still true? Like, does that still, will he be able to do that in Detroit? And that'll be interesting to watch for me.
Yeah. By the way, so the Pistons are the one team, thank God for the Pistons, because this is two of the last 3 years now where they have said, we're just going to get our business out of the way like 4 days early. There was a Tobias Harris trade a couple years ago was like 2-3 days before the deadline. Blake was a full like week plus before the deadline. Like, let's space it out. I like that Stan Van Gundy, just space it out. Back to the Cavs. About 2 weeks ago on this podcast with Windhorst, we were floating around who would you go after for the Nets pick. And I said, okay, let's think from the Cavs perspective. They want to sort of have a buffer for LeBron leaving. So is there a younger player that I can control for a number of years who's good enough now that can help them, who's a good matchup for the Warriors because they still care about that as much of a challenge as the East is now going to be for them? And I pitched the Nets pick and whatever filler for Aaron Gordon.
Hmm.
And everyone laughed at me, including the Cavs, I think. And I thought, well, okay, well, let's just do it out.
Doesn't mean
Aaron Gordon's 22 or whatever he is. He's about to be a restricted free agent, so you can have him for as much as you want, as many, you know, you control his next 4 years, whatever it is. He can switch across essentially every position. So very valuable against the Warriors. His 3-point shooting appears to be real. And, you know, the Magic have a new front office. No one really knows what their MO is. Maybe they're not excited to pay Aaron Gordon $20 million a year because that is maybe what it's going to take. He's one of the few free agents who might actually get a monster offer sheet this summer. Now that's going to be a hard sell for LeBron. I get it. He's going to say this guy's 22. He's never been in the playoffs. Can I really go in the trenches with him? That's fine. Everything's going to be a hard sell to LeBron. It's LeBron. Like, there are four guys in the league who are not going to be a hard sell to LeBron. And then one of them is going to come in. Like, Kevin Love was an easy sell. And then Kevin Love came in. He's like, oh, this guy has all these limitations. I don't like him. Now we're going to have a tense relationship for 4 years. It's LeBron. That's what it is. So that trade, I don't think that the Magic would do that trade. The Nets pick isn't guaranteed to be good enough, I don't think, for the Magic to do that trade. And there's just nothing else in the cupboard there. But I don't think that trade is crazy. But I'm more interesting for you is, well, having you on the podcast is, What is this new front office going to do with Orlando? What does the Jeff Weltman, John Hammond regime sort of think? We've heard almost no buzz about them. Gordon's going to be a free agent. Payton's going to be a free agent. Do we know anything about what they're doing over the next 3 days and sort of their macro view of this, like, forgotten, you know, backwater NBA team?
Well, I think their view all year has been, we are going to evaluate, take as much time as we can to evaluate what it is we have here. And I talked to Jeff Weltman. I remember Jeff Weltman and I had this conversation before, probably shortly after he took the job, and he was trying to figure out what he had there. And, you know, he learned the lesson in Toronto about, you know, when he and Masai took over there, or he came in and he was there with Masai, and they were looking at, where are we going here with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and Dwayne Casey? And they came awfully close to breaking that team up, really close, and didn't. And then all of a sudden, he said there came a day where Jeff called Masai up. They were playing really well. I think Masai might have been on the road, or Jeff was, one of them was home, one was on the road scouting. And they had won another game and were on a good run. And they said, and Jeff said to Masai something like, hey, maybe this is the team we imagine. Maybe we have the kind of players. Maybe the team that we're imagining, do you think maybe we have it and we need to keep, and I think with Orlando, you know, they're trying to figure out with Elfrid Payton and Aaron Gordon and, you know, these younger guys that they have who, you know, you don't want to give up on too quickly, because sometimes that light goes on, and sometimes it's about finding. Look at Victor Oladipo and what he's become since he left there. And Victor and I talked about this. Like, and you know, he felt that year in Oklahoma City was tremendous for his growth, that being with Westbrook and being there, that he didn't think he could have made the jump he's made if he went to Orlando to Indiana. He needed that year in Oklahoma.
Interesting.
And that putting the right people around them and the right, like, who are keepers here? Who do we want to pay? But I don't think they feel a pressure to have to go out and do a deal at the deadline, like to do something to rush that decision-making process. That they have a window here to come in and try to figure out what direction they want to go in. And while I know they've been active and they've been talking with a lot of people, and I don't think they feel a pressure to have to act yet, and that they want to sort of stay true to this. Like, and I think the deadline moving up, it probably doesn't affect it greatly, but you do have to make a little bit quicker decision. Everyone does, on where you are as a team and where you're, and whether it's for this year or long term. I don't know if those couple of weeks make a really big difference, but I think certainly for Orlando, you know, they've just tried. I think Jonathan Isaac, while he's had some injury problems this year, they're thrilled with him. They think he's going to be really, really good, and that's certainly a building block for them, that they hit it with him in the draft. But I just don't think Jeff and John Hammond feel pressure to have to act. But, you know, something may come up this week that they do indeed do.
Hey, everyone. Recently, the Lowe household has started using Sunbasket for delicious home-cooked meals where everything is prepped easily for you. And it, for someone who's concerned about time, you know, I don't have to shop, I don't have to measure stuff, I don't have to do all that. Like, Sunbasket prepares it for you. All the ingredients are clean and organic. There are 18 healthy options to choose from every week, suitable for any lifestyle, any taste, any of that. It makes it very easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home, which is, you know, you go to the grocery store, you buy organic, you start chopping and cooking and measuring and all that. It takes forever. Now, you can get more options than ever. Just go to the Sunbasket app and pick from 18 different weekly recipes, things like albacore tuna steaks with green beans and soft-cooked eggs, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa, roasted sweet potatoes, all of this stuff. There are paleo options, gluten-free options, lean and clean options, vegan, Mediterranean, family, more. We use the Chef's Choice, where we just get the best Chef's Choice delivered to us, and we've loved it so far. It works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh organic produce and reasonably raised meats and seafood. It's pre-measured. It's easy to prep. If you're fast, you can make them in 30 minutes. Now, me, I can't quite hit the 30-minute deadline because I'm kind of incompetent in the kitchen. But if you're competent, I'm confident you can make it in 30 minutes. So, And best of all, go to sunbasket.com/low, L-O-W-E. That's my last name, sunbasket.com/low, to learn more. And if you purchase, get $35 off your first order. Sunbasket.com/low, L-O-W-E, $35 off. That's a lot. So go to sunbasket.com/low. Last couple things on the Cavs, and we'll go into rapid fire other teams. You know, one of the Cavs trades that makes some degree of sense is some package with Isaiah Thomas and the Nets pick and a whole bundle of salary to Charlotte for Kemba Walker and Nick Batum. It sounds great because Kemba is a an all-star caliber player on fire right now. I think he was 6 of 19 the other, maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, but before that. Batum is this multi-positional wing, you know, fits what LeBron needs, fits what they need to compete with the Warriors, blah, blah, blah. You can go and try to build the trade. Like, that's $34 million of salary coming to Cleveland, who's already over the tax and paying their repeater tax. Okay. So even if they take in, if they send out 30, they're still taking in plus 4, which is times whatever, times a lot. At this point, like, and Dan Gilbert cares about that as much as he spent. Like, he's going to care about just like an extra $15 million to get Nick Batum and Kemba Walker. And then you look at it from Charlotte's perspective; they're facing tax issues going forward, and they have to take in $30+ million in salary to make this work. And then you start looking at the contracts the Cavs have to offer, and it's like, I mean, do both Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith have to be in that deal? Because at that point. Like, even if you get the Nets pick, I kind of think you're selling low on Kemba Walker. Like, as much as the trade rumors have been out there, like, Kemba Walker has a chance to be arguably the greatest Charlotte Hornet of all time if he plays his whole career there. I mean, he's beloved. He's the captain. They say he's the captain 9,000 times during every Hornets game. That's a deal that sounds easy. And then when you actually go to mechanically make it, you're like, man, if we got to take in all this money, the Nets pick, it may not be worth it. And then from Cleveland's perspective, you got that Batum contract sitting on your book. Like, that's a harder deal. Mm-hmm. That's my only, then you look at, like, a lot of people have pitched me on Twitter. Could they get both Rodney Hood and Derek Favors from Utah? And, you know, Utah's trying to get rid of both of those guys. Yeah. Like, I'm not, like, they're both okay players. They clearly help Cleveland now. I'm not sure even both of them together are worth the Nets pick. I mean, like, there's a reason Utah's trying to get rid of it. This is just, my only point is, it's just harder. It's very easy to say put the Nets pick on the market. It's harder to find a trade that works. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. It is hard. And I think Cleveland's standard right now in that pick is Paul George, who is not available and almost assuredly will not be available this week, or a really good young player on a rookie contract. Let's say this hypothetically, like a Porzingis, a Booker, but those players aren't available and they don't become available typically. So what so far has fit the criteria Cleveland has had, is not out there for them. But back to the potential of Cleveland, Charlotte, I know they had interest in Kemba Walker. Of course, anybody who needs
that,
a point guard.
Those teams have definitely talked.
Yeah, they've definitely talked. And if you're, listen, anybody who has any remote need at that position is checked in and they've had that conversation with Kemba for lots of reasons. I mean, he's got probably one of the best contracts in the league. He's got another year, on the deal, you know, $12 million a year. When he signed the deal, it was kind of a market number for what good point guards were getting. I think Kyle Lowry was around that number at the time when he had done his extension, and Ty Lawson had gotten an extension at that number. Kemba's was a little bit after them.
Drew Holiday.
That was sort of what those guys were getting. So I think, if you're Charlotte and you're going to take on J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson and have these guys under contract, and how that, you know, like, yeah, you get the Brooklyn pick, but what does it do to your, you know, they're not going to be thrilled being there. And so, I don't know. Charlotte's got to figure out where it wants to go here and what they're doing. They've got a lot of organizational questions about, like, what exactly are we trying to be here? What do we want to do? I think that would be tough based on, I agree with you, the case you're making for Batum and Kemba, probably, certainly it makes them better in the short term. But if I'm Charlotte, I'm going, I think I got to get more for Kemba. Wow. But, you know, and again, getting that Batum contract off is big, but you're certainly taking back some money there going forward. And this is where, like, a little bit later deadline would make a difference, because if you could watch how the Nets, you want to have a sense of, it's a big difference if that pick is fourth or if that pick is eighth or ninth. Like, it's a huge difference. And so you've got to be looking, in an ideal world, you're trading that, a team would be trading for that Brooklyn pick closer to the draft, or once the teams, once the draft order is aligned, because then you could do like what Chicago did last year, where they said, okay, we're going to do the Jimmy Butler deal at the draft, but we know that number seven gets us Markkanen, and we want Markkanen, and we think he's going to be there. It's a lot easier to trade for that pick when you can say, okay, we know what number it's at. We have a sense of what the draft order is going to be, and that, let's say, we can get one of two players will be able, like one of these two guys, whoever they are, is going to be available at that number. All right, let's do the trade. When you trade for that pick now, you just don't know. The lottery hasn't happened, and so it's much riskier to trade. You know, I know we talk about that Nets pick like it's gold, and it is gold, but it could also end up just being like, you know, the eighth pick.
Well, it's crazy. The bottom eight teams in the league are all within like two games of each other in the loss column right now. That from the Nets down to the Kings, they all have 36, 34, 35 losses. The Hawks have 37, but they're all, I mean, you just don't know. And I don't even, 10 days from now, it would really take an injury somewhere for us to know more about the Nets, I think. But it's crazy how jumbled all that is. Okay, let's get quickly rapid fire to a couple of teams that are chasing Cleveland. And now, I think internally feel like, oh, we may have a chance. Over the weekend, you reported that, Boston has made made Marcus Smart available. Marcus Smart is in trade talks.
I would say 80% of the league is available.
Yeah,
like, right. Like at all times, but yeah, right.
That Boston has looked at trading Marcus Smart, which is a shoe I was kind of waiting for to drop, because he's going to be a free agent. He wants to get paid. I think he turned down what Boston would consider a fairly fair extension offer in the fall. And they're just, you know, once Kyrie's new max kicks in a couple of years, they're going to, and Jalen and Tatum and all, you have to do the math going forward. Their payroll's just going to be very big, and I don't know that there's room for Marcus Smart at $14 million. What do they want for Marcus Smart, and what's the end game? Is it, can we get an asset then that we then flip for Tyreek Evans or another player like that, or is it a player that we like? What's the latest on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, like ideally, everybody wants a first for everything. I don't know that they're going to get a first round pick for Marcus Smart. Like, as you said, like you're going to have to pay him in restricted free agency this summer. He brings a lot of teams like him for reasons he's a winning player. He's he can win you a game or two in the playoffs with, you know, in lots of different ways. He doesn't shoot the ball as well as people want the guards to be able to shoot it in this league. But he certainly brings a lot of intangibles and tangible things that are helpful to winning. And people have seen him do that in Boston. But it's hard to get, you know, first-round picks. There's like two scenarios anymore where you're seeing first-round picks go in. And it's to get money off, like the Pelicans had to do in the Chicago deal. They had to get a contract off. And they're giving you a first, essentially, to get the money off. And then for a star player, for like a real, you know, for like Blake Griffin, you're giving up a first. The players in between, the Tyreek Evans and the Lou Williams, and I'll be interested to see if these players do command a first-round pick, or is it going to be what kind of is termed in the league a fake first, which something that's so heavily protected it becomes two second-round picks in time, but you can sort of say, well, we got a first for it. Even though it's probably never going to
convey. Even last year, the Lou Williams and Bogdanovich trades where, you know, those guys were acquired in exchange for a first. Well, they also, like, Houston got the Lakers to take Brewer, and the Wizards got the Nets to take Nicholson. So you have to take some dead money.
That's
too.
Right. And those were as much money. Right. That's right. It was getting the Nicholson money off former Bonnie's great.
I forgot.
No, I'm sure some of that money's been funneled back into our alma mater, so I'm glad.
Okay.
If anyone was going to get overpaid, I'm glad Andrew did. So, I think that they're, you know, but going back to Smart, it's, you know, if there's players who maybe are on shorter term money who could be rotational guys in Boston, I think that would certainly interest them. But, you know, Terry Rozier's emergence this year, he's been tremendous. And there's another player who you figure is a keeper and you're going to eventually have to pay. And so, listen, I think it's probably likely Smart stays. But, again, when he didn't take that extension last in the fall and, you know, like you said, I think Boston felt like they made a fair offer. You're going to be in, like, it's only natural that you're going to be in some trade talks because a team is saying, okay, we offered what we really want to pay for this player. He turned it down. So if we're going to keep him, we're going to end up paying more than we really want to pay. And so, of course, you're going to talk about some deals with him, and Boston has done that.
The other team that's right at the top of the East that there's been almost no buzz about is Toronto. They were initially linked with DeAndre Jordan, which I didn't quite understand, and yeah. I'm not sure if it was true or if it remains true. There's a general sort of call for them to consolidate their young players and picks and go after a big fish. You know, their young players are all good. I'm not sure that consolidating them makes anybody like super excited to get like a bunch of young role players. I don't know, but they clearly, I think, you know, they're 21-4 at home. They're really good. They have the best point differential in the East. They have to look at this as we've got a chance. I know what's happened in the playoffs before. I know. Everyone knows. They all know. They're sick of talking about it. They're sick of hearing about it. Their offense has gotten a little gummy in crunch time, a little like old school Raptors gummy in crunch time. I get it. I know. But, you know, you only have so many chances. And Cleveland is a little more vulnerable. This is different. This is different than what's happened in the past, or it's at least a more extreme version of what's happened to Cleveland in the past. Any buzz on Toronto kind of trying to get that one last? Is it going to be like a couple seconds for this year's sort of PJ Tucker kind of thing? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I think they're like a couple other teams who just don't, like Oklahoma City in terms of having picks. You look at contenders who, you know, they had to give up a pick to get Damari Carroll's money off to do a couple of their other deals this summer, last summer. And so I think they're going to be very hesitant to move any more of those future picks. I think for Toronto, what kind of has been great for them is that because they have such a capacity for improvement within, because these young players are getting better and better, they built their bench off of drafting well and then developing those guys, and you're seeing growth internally that, you know, you don't necessarily have to go out, like you're going to be, I think their hope is we're going to be better in the playoffs than we are now. Because, like, those young guys are going to keep getting better and better, and they're improving. And, you know, their patience of just staying in there with DeRozan and Lowry and bringing them back and you know, JV. And I think that, like, yeah, they couldn't get past Cleveland. Well, this isn't – Kyrie Irving's not there anymore. And that's the bottom line. Like, it's not the same Cleveland team because Kyrie's gone. And so last year in the playoffs, they were certainly frustrated – to lose the way they did, but Kyle Lowry was injured. And, you know, even Masai, you'd say like, well, you know, he's like, hey, we don't make excuses. I'm like, but you had an excuse. Like, Kyle was hurt. You have two All-Stars, and only one of them played in the series after game two. And now you've got to feel like you have to look at this and say they're not the same team. And so Boston certainly is formidable, and Washington – for them, you know, they have to be concerned about the Wizards. Like, that starting five still has been, you know, they beat them badly, you know, 2 years ago, right? So, but anyway, I think that for Toronto, they're going to be careful with this idea that they've got to make, you know, a move here that mortgages any of their future. Like, they have an opportunity here by just playing it out with this group. And DeMar DeRozan is playing. He is elevated to another level. Like, he has become, like, I don't know, like, there's like one level of player above him in the league, like superstar. But DeMar is a legitimate star, and his game has grown. He's doing everything. You talk to, like, he's just doing everything better. He's doing it faster. He's really totally come into his own, and the guy is such a tenacious worker, and he has been, and you've seen him just get better and better. And I think now, especially in the playoffs, there's a pressure off of Kyle Lowry that he doesn't have to do as much. There was so much pressure on those two players to deliver offensively and put up big numbers. And there's more balance on that team. There's more guys who can help. And I don't think you're having to ask Kyle to do as much in a series. He can be more of a playmaker. He doesn't have to, score 30 points a night for that team to win in the postseason. I just think there's more balance overall in Toronto, and the ball has moved better. They made a conscious effort to change their offense and feel like the ball was moving better than just isolated around DeRozan and Lowry. So there's lots of reasons for them to stand pat, relatively speaking anyway, in terms of not having to really dig into their core to do a trade.
Couple more very quick ones, although the answer isn't quick. They've kind of disappeared from the buzz meter, but they're the big fish hovering over all of this. And, you know, the trade deadline is a deadline, but transactions are sort of continuous and fluid in the NBA. Do the Lakers have a plan B? Like if Paul George and LeBron aren't going there, or one of the two isn't going there, and I don't know that to be the case. I'm just saying, like, they don't know that they're getting either one of them. Like, they are certainly not projecting any sort of confidence or certainty that those guys are locked in, or even that one of them is locked in. We know they've been trying to get off money. Randall and Clarkson have been in the trade mill forever. Cousins is now injured. He was a plan B. Like, do the Lakers have a plan B?
I think the plan B is to just sort of, I think would be to temper these expectations going into free agency and say, okay, look at what we did this year. We drafted Ball, Kuzma, and Josh Hart. Like, you look, I mean, listen, Ball, he's had the injuries here lately, but he's, certainly, shown he's got a chance to be a really good player. But Kuzma, and now Josh Hart, who's played great. Like you get a pick as late as him. And Kuzma, you have to give the Lakers credit for nailing those picks, and they did. Like, given, where they took Hart, and they can sell a little bit. And I think what the Lakers will try to do is sell, hey, we made progress. We drafted well, and we have some guys to start building around. And we can just come back to this in 2019 and 2020, that this doesn't have to be, they don't have that patience in LA. I don't think Magic Johnson really has that patience. I don't know if the ownership wants to do it that way, but it's easier to sell missing in free agency when you have drafted well, and all of a sudden you're seeing some young players here who you can start building a foundation around. And you've got Kawhi Leonard coming in the future. You've got Klay Thompson coming down the road in free agency that you can start to try to target, and some others. And, if they do miss out this year, and I'll just say this, like, if given where this team is, let's say they could get LeBron, that team's not good enough to win. Like, now LeBron and Paul George, yeah, they'd be really, really good. They wouldn't be the favorite. I'm not sure we would say they're better than Houston if Houston just stood pat. Houston has a pretty balanced roster now, and role players, veteran role players who you win with in the playoffs. The Lakers will have these, potentially, like these two great players with a bunch of young guys who, aren't there yet. And so if you're the Lakers, like if you're being honest about it, I'm not saying you would ever turn back getting LeBron or Paul George, but like you can just sort of go back to it in a year. And I think typically you sort of know before July 1, like, if you really have a chance or not. And I think if they feel like they don't have a chance and those guys aren't coming, or one of them's coming, or whatever it's going to be, they will try to temper the expectations. And again, then they don't have to start giving up picks and assets to get off those contracts, because they're going to have, they've got money that's not going to be easy to get off. And then you have to start, if you're in like a rush to dump money because you're trying to create those two max slots and they have a lot of, you're going to have to renounce a bunch of those contracts too. And so like it allows them to not have to be in like start attaching picks or young players that they don't want to give away to get off money in a rush to sign those guys if they think they're coming.
I want to let you go because you have to do. This is your week or many. Well, you got a lot of weeks, but this is like you got to be working the phones and all that. I don't want to waste your time. Is there any team we didn't talk about that you're dying to talk about? Or are you ready to bounce and start getting on your multiple phones and everything?
Well, you know, Boston will be interesting here. Tyreke Evans, and if they can add another player here, they obviously Greg Monroe is. They got him without having to give anything up, and. You know, Brooklyn will be interesting. You know, they've done a really good job of developing some of these kind of second-chance guys in the league. You know, look at Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris. Jahlil Okafor hasn't, you know, he might have, I don't know if he has much value right now. I'm not sure he has any more value than the day he showed up there. But I think Brooklyn could still, Damari Carroll has, because there's so few at his position around the league, Damari Carroll has value, and so I think Brooklyn's wanted to show progress this year. They wanted to win more games, and again, they don't have their pick, so it doesn't really. There's no motivation for them to tank. They want to show progress, and they've certainly done that. But they've done a good job of, maybe Joe Harris gets them a second, or maybe Spencer Dinwiddie has just been tremendous, and they have him under. Contract for next year on a team option at really low number, and so you're not giving up Spencer Dinwiddie without like getting a lot back. Like to me, you're like whoever they would draft. Let's say they got a pick, would he be better than Spencer Dinwiddie's become? Probably not. And so I think Brooklyn's put itself in a position where they can keep gathering up some assets here.
Agreed. I think if they could get a first for Dinwiddie, they would think about it.
Yes.
For sure. We'll see if they can get that. All right. I don't want to keep you.
No.
Go back to work. We appreciate the time. You're going to be in Bristol all week. Are we going to see you across all the platforms from straight out of Bristol this week? Sports
yes.
Centers, jumps, everything?
Yes. Yeah, I'll be in Bristol all week. Bobby Marks is here too. And we'll have a couple lunches in the calf and we'll be on the phones a little bit too. So
it's a solid calf. They got a lot of good options there.
It's tremendous.
It's a good calf.
It's tremendous. Yeah.
Like nice outdoor seating when the weather's nice. It's not bad. It's a good calf. All right. Go enjoy the calf, Woj. Thanks for your time, man. And
hopefully
we have a fun trade deadline.
All right. I hope so, too. I'll talk to you later. Thanks for having me.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.